you're never going to get to those good parts if you run away from the bad parts, because the bad and the good, they're located in the same spot. So, like, if you run from the pain, you're running from the growth.
Never quit radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. As always, thank you guys for listening and watching, and please don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button wherever you get your show. So today, before we kick it off with our special guest, let's do our usual, our weekly Patreon question of the week. And this week we have, who is your all-time favorite movie villain?
That's actually a great question.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good one. Mason, yeah. What do you got? You got one on that?
I actually consider myself a big time movie guy, and I have a plethora of movie villains running through my brain right now.
Oh, yeah.
I think one of my favorite movies, I love the Coen brothers. One of my favorite movies is No Country for Old Men, and I love the bad guy in that movie. He's so good.
He plays a great badass. In all his movies.
That scene when he walks into that gas station with the quarter.
How great is that?
I love that scene.
That cold-blooded son of a bitch. When he, just think about how powerful that is. He did that over a TV and got our attention.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I think Kingpin, Bill Murray. You guys ever seen Kingpin?
Yeah, but that's great. Yeah.
Dude, that guy, you kidding me? That's a low, that's an Eve. That's a, I don't like that guy. That guy's brutal. That's a villain right there.
All right.
One more. Maybe. Okay, how about let's go Django Unchained, Candyland. That guy, Mr. Candy.
Candy.
He's brutal.
That was a great movie.
Top three, right? There's my top three villains for you. How about that?
Django Unchained. We actually watched that when we were traveling, and we ended up watching it back to back. Like, we restarted it and watched it over because it was so good.
That good. Yeah, it is a good movie.
Yeah.
What about, I'm curious, what about you guys, Marcus? What do you got?
Oh, I got, go ahead, Hunter.
I was going to say, so if we're going basic, I really think the guy that played Joker a few years ago, he really crushed, crushed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it changes. Yeah,
he crushed that role. Yeah. But also to go more of a style, like a route that you went, Mason. What's his face from Inglourious Basterds?
Hans Landa.
Yes.
Freaking Hans Landa. That's where I was going.
He was.
How about the bear Jew in that movie?
He was great too. Man, that sucker can write some movies, man. He can write some movies. Mine's probably going to be Kaiser Soze, and with a little bit of Tyler Durden thrown in there. Talking about
Fight Club, good pickup.
Fight Club one. Kaiser Soze, straight up badass. Just
I'm not familiar with that one.
Usual Suspects.
Okay, yeah. Sorry, my bad. Yeah, Kevin Spacey.
I know we're missing one, man. When we think about it, halfway through the podcast, we'll be like, "Hey, bro, I got a bad one for you."
I love this question.
Well, see, I don't consider him a bad guy. He was a role model for me back in the day. That's how I got to the SEAL teams. Freaking him, Patrick Bateman.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good question.
I don't even have. I'm just gonna enjoy watching.
We just watched the entire January of James Bond. You don't have one bad guy from there? Who was the best Bond villain?
Yeah, so for January, Marcus declared January James Bond January, and we watched from the very first one in 1963 all the way to the last one in chronological order. And so James Bond is very fresh on my mind, but I didn't like any of the bad guys.
I got a bad guy that just popped in. So okay. you guys had me thinking of James Bond, which then I started thinking of Austin Powers.
Okay, Dr. Evil. Thank you.
Dr. Evil.
Bro, I swear I was just about to say that.
You gotta have Dr. Evil.
That dude, Dr. Evil. Thank you. Yeah. That's
$1 million.
That's it.
Yeah.
He's a doctor and he's freaking evil. It's all in there. It covers everything.
And then you have like Fasha with Goldman. Yeah. You have all those villains.
Right, man.
That he played.
So before this January,
Dr. Evil.
Before this January, I had never watched a James Bond from start to finish, and that's why we did this challenge this month. And I didn't realize in James Bond that there is a real Dr. Evil throughout, really through the 60s, 70s, and a little bit of the 80s. They killed him off in the 80s. And then he had a twin.
Yep.
But I found that if you watch it in chronological order, it's fascinating. Now there's 29 of them, so you need a lot of time, but it's a really cool franchise of movies to sit and watch. Up. Yeah, I love that. Great question.
Yeah, Dr. Evil. Good pull, Mason. That's nice.
Yeah, that was a good question. That's a good one.
That's a good conversation starter.
Yeah, that was awesome.
We'll have to go with the heroes next time. Very scary. Brother. All right, man. Thank you again for coming on here. Like I said, I got a file on you. I want to introduce you to the team.
Sure.
We know a little bit about your backstory and kind of what you've had to go through and what you're going through right now, which is another reason we got you on here, brother. So if you wouldn't mind, tell us a little bit about yourself. Like, where you come from. Where were you born?
I was born and raised in Utah, dude. I was, first of all, dude, it's an honor to be on. And since my traumatic event, which we'll talk about later, like I'm very much in the thick of my grief still and going through it. And I didn't really realize what I was walking in today when I was on your podcast. And dude, like, I just want to set the record straight from my perspective. Like, what I've had to go through, so different. Like, you voluntarily went over there and the sacrifices that you made. I'm not Marcus level. I just want to make that clear. I don't really have a decision. I just have to do what I got to do. But I really just want to tell you thank you. And I think it's so cool that I get to meet people like you. And I'm honored that you think I'm cool enough to be on your podcast, man. So
cool enough. One thing. Thanks. See that sign behind you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's
exactly what we're about.
Yeah.
That's why you're here. Some of us down here, they got pinched, pushed, plowed, whatever you want to call it. This is our life, bro. This is our life. And you're the one, you came in here with us, you took it, you're taking it, and you're a prime example of how to get through it. And because of that, people need that. They need that guidance, man. It's real easy for us to shut down. You didn't do that, and you're not going to do it. That's why you're here.
Yeah. And I appreciate that, but like, your level of courage is different level. So, but I'm honored to be here. But I grew up in Utah, born and raised. I love basketball, dude. So I spent, and for a 5'10" white kid from Utah, like, not the best sport to pick. Like,
I got you. I know exactly where you're coming from. I know exactly where you're coming from on that.
Yeah, but
can be a little hard on us, man, sometimes when we try to roll on the court.
Yeah, but that was my childhood.
You got brothers and sisters growing up?
Yeah, dude, I was raised in the Mormon, the LDS church. So okay,
I was going to ask you because that's y'all's area.
I'm no longer a part of it, but I was, and I had a great childhood, great parents, but I was the youngest of five.
Okay.
And I love my family. We're super close, and I don't know where I'd be without them. But yeah, I was the youngest of five growing up.
So. Everyone still lives in Utah?
Yeah, everyone pretty close, except me. I'm 4 hours away. But dude, I had two older brothers, two older sisters, and I had one older brother was a football player. Another older brother was a state championship wrestler. So it was good for me growing up. I just kind of got beat up every day, and I think it made me tougher. So
it does that. Yeah. It does that, especially when it's coming from your siblings. So all y'all play different sports? All y'all are different ages?
Yeah. So I'm 33. Carly's 30. Damn, we're getting old. Carly's 39. Race would be 41. Yeah, 41. Sage is 44. Shannon's 45. We're getting old, man.
How about that? It's time for that midlife crisis for some of your siblings. I'm in there with them.
Yeah. Me, yeah.
Hit 50, you got to go buy something, you know, or something.
Yeah, but family, man, that's always been number one for me. So that was just, I grew up with a dad. Quick story real quick. Like, I remember my dad telling me, he's taking me to basketball practice, and he's like, I don't even know how we were on the topic, but he told me, he's like, Mason, like, I think I'm the richest guy in the world. And I'm like, I mean, my dad's a therapist, like middle class. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, I have you and your brothers and sisters and your mom. And like, I have it all. And so like that's kind of what I had to shape my perspective. And so I always just valued family and relationships as the number one thing. Like that's what makes someone rich, is those quality relationships.
I teach all my kids that. I'm like, hey, when you go out, whenever you run into somebody, you go out and try and make a friend over money. My father taught me that. Everywhere I go, I try to make a best friend in every town. You know why? Because you can't buy some of the stuff those people will give you, what they'll show you, and what they allow you to do. That's the best part about having family and about having those friendships, man, is it'll overcome money quick.
Yep. I love it, dude.
So when did you meet your wife?
Courtney, we were high school sweethearts, and like I viewed girls as like the enemy, like a distraction, because I wanted to go play college ball. And so like I had to practice, and like, so I can't like be dating girls. Like I'm dedicated to this thing. And but then I met Courtney, and she was just so funny and easy to talk to and very pretty. And we just went to every school dance and became a couple. And our senior year in high school, we got voted most likely to marry your high school sweetheart.
Oh, I feel like that's a trend. Like you have to get, then it gets done.
Yeah, like, all right.
You
know, like
when the high school friends put that on you, it's kind of, it's a done deal.
That's exactly what we thought. Cause we got married, of course. And Courtney, she was an athlete too. She played basketball and volleyball and softball. And, we were just,
you come from a big family.
Yeah. She has two sisters, two brothers as well. She's second oldest from
you
her
grew up
side.
In the church too?
Yeah.
Yep. Right on.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so y'all got married right out of high school?
Well, yeah, I served an LDS mission, so I went to Alabama for 2 years, Roll Tide, and then came back home, got married, and then
it just got a new football. Oh, I'm sorry, man. That's I'm sorry.
Yeah, then we got married, and I went and played college ball in where I'm living right now in Southern Utah. It's a school called Dixie State, which is now called Utah Tech. But I played basketball there, and I got a degree.
Oh, that's because it's growing, right?
Yeah, it's growing.
When you go to changing names like that, that means it's growing.
Yeah, it's growing. This place is growing quick.
That's cool, man.
Yeah.
Where'd she go?
So she went to the same – Utah Tech.
Okay, Roger that.
Got her nursing degree there. So we graduated at the same time. And after we graduated, she became a nurse. And I went back to my old high school and became the head basketball coach.
Oh, right on, man.
So yeah, so then I was coaching basketball. So we went back to our old stomping ground, and we had three kids while we were doing that. And Marcus. So the first kid we had, we named him Riggins. And we named him Riggins from the Friday Night Lights TV show.
Taylor Kitsch's role.
Yeah, Tim Riggins.
I'll tell him you said that.
Yeah. And then we had Blue. He was our second child. And then a couple years later, we had our dog.
Like old school?
Sorry, what was that?
Where'd the name Blue come from?
So his first name's actually Julian, but when he was born,
that's my boy's name too.
No way.
Middle name is Julian. Yeah.
And so when
you tell anybody that, nickname, dude, middle names are the hookup from parents.
Well, yeah. Well, so like we didn't have an idea for a middle name. So Julian is born. She did. Oh yeah.
Same thing. Had no idea. And I was like, how the hell did you pick that?
Dude, that's how every nickname in middle, that's how all the good ones are made.
I picked it out of a Saints book.
Yeah.
There's a Saint Julian. That's how I picked it.
I love the name Julian.
Yeah.
But anyway, he was born with the cord around his neck, and so he had a really blue, bruised face. And so all the nurses and me and Courtney were calling him Baby Blue. And then when it came time to pick a middle name, we picked Blue, and it just stuck.
All right, on. Cool.
So, yeah. And then our daughter, Frankie. And that was our little family, dude. And then,
your dad was right. Your dad was on point when he said he was blessed, because that's that all American family.
Yeah. And
basketball coach at the high school. Your wife's a nurse. You got the kid. My wife and I think about this a lot, bro. When I take my kids, they play basketball at the school. My son loves basketball. Loves it. And I love to go watch him play. And I sit in the stands with the other families, and I look around, and I'm like, man, this is all-American families. They exist. Y'all exist. There's a bunch of them at the school that we go to with my kids. And they're great. It's just one family. One guy does air conditioning. When you look at them, they look like the all-American mom and dad. Their kids are great. When I show up, I look like I just got out of Leavenworth. Okay? You know what I'm talking about? Everyone's scared to death when I walk around, because apparently I always look like I'm in a bad mood. No one talks to me. But the whole time I'm sitting there, I'm marveling at the fact that these families that I'm in there with are fantastic. I'm also looking for somebody to slip up so I can execute something on the basketball court and have one moment of coolness.
Death of you.
But my point with that is y'all are what hold America together. Like when you hear something like that, like, hey, man, he's a coach, he's a nerd. That's what we, guys like me, man, we'll bleed all day for y'all just to watch y'all live.
No, I mean... Yeah. And I do think, yeah, because I'm a motivational speaker now and podcaster. But dude, like being a good dad, that is the number one, best, quickest, for sure way to make a difference in this world, in my opinion.
Man, once you get that father title, everything changes.
That's how I see it.
I had a tough time putting it on. Especially as they get older, you know, they rub you around the edges, but it is. Everything changes. You think that it doesn't. You think that it doesn't until you get that father qual.
Granddad
qual is a big one.
I'm cracking up when he said no one wants to talk to you. Like, I could just picture you just walking in to a basketball game or practice. Like, I see the whole thing. Like, who you are. Like, everyone probably knows.
Hey, it's a private Christian school, too. You know what I'm talking about? Like, passive Christian school. And then me and my brother come easing in there. Just people look like strung death. Yeah, it's funny. I love it. They probably hate me there, but I love being around them.
They're just giving you your space.
They're great. Yeah, see what I'm talking about?
And they're scared of you.
Like, I have my own bleachers.
Yeah, I believe you. I believe you.
All right, sorry to interrupt you.
Go ahead, brother.
No, so I think I was the head coach for three, four years. And like you said, just kind of living the American dream. And I mean, we weren't perfect, but like we were close. Like Courtney, like we had a great marriage. And I get a phone call one day, and it's a phone call from St. George, Utah again, where I played college basketball, where Courtney and I lived when we were first married. And it was this place called Nets on Fire, this big basketball complex. And they called me with it was my dream job. They call me up, they're like, hey, are you Mason Sawyer? I'm like, yeah. They're like, we want you for our basketball operations guy, which basically is we want you to train players. We want you to put together AAU teams and travel and coach and train. And I'm like,
okay.
For real? And I'm like, yeah, we'll pay you this much, which wasn't a ton of money, but compared to a high school teaching salary, it was more money. So, like, dude, it was my dream job. And so I talked to Courtney. I'm like, Courtney, like, what do you think? And we both love St. George. And we always said if we could find an excuse to go back, like, let's go back. And so I took the job. And Courtney's such a good nurse. It was really easy for her to find a job down there. So she found a job as a nurse. I was working at Nets on Fire. And then probably a month. It's, everything's kind of blurry, but maybe a month or two after that, my family had a big family reunion going on. And dude, like we just got done saying, family's number one. We don't like, we go to every family reunion that we can make. But this year, like Courtney and I, we just both started new jobs, and it was our first tournament that weekend of this family vacation. And I just took on the job, so I just felt like I had to do this tournament. And so I told my family we weren't going. They're like, yeah, no problem. Then a couple days go by, that Friday rolls around, and my wife, Courtney, comes up to me as I'm getting ready to go coach. And she's like, hey, I think I'm going to end up taking the kids to the family reunion. You're going to be coaching all weekend. They'll have fun. We'll be back Sunday. I'm like, yeah, great idea. And then I told my wife, like, you should call my brother Race, because he lives in St. George as well. It's about a 4-hour drive. What was that?
How do you say his name?
Race, like you run a race.
Love it.
Dude, that's a cool name.
That's
too,
a cool
man.
Name.
Yeah. Get this. He named one of his kids Ran.
There you go.
Yeah, that's just like not even real, right? It's ridiculous. Race, anyway.
Now you need to run.
Yeah. Oh, man. Race. Yeah. So Race, he kind of has the same thing going on. So his wife, Keisha, can't go. His son, Ran, can't go because of football. His daughter, Faith, can't go because of school and stuff. But my brother can go, and his youngest son, Ryder, can go. So my brother, Race, and my nephew, Ryder, go with my family to the family reunion. And then on that Sunday, it was July 25th, 2021, they're driving back from that family reunion. I think my brother, Race, was driving. That way Courtney could help with all the kids. And there was a big dust storm that got, I mean, I don't really know a lot of the details of the accident, to be honest with you, but a big dust storm got kicked up and it just covered the highway. And it caused a 22 car pileup, and it killed 8 people. And 5 of those 8 people were, it was my family. It was our car. And I remember the doctor calling me. I was just sitting in my room waiting for them to come home. And my brother's wife actually called me first, Keisha. She called me and she's like, Mason, have you heard from Courtney or Race? And I said, no. Well, I said, Courtney texted me when they left the gas station and said they'd be home soon and see you in a minute. Love you. And I said, love you too. But that was it. And she said, well, they should be home by now. And I just have a bad feeling.
What if I told you the best bacon, the best steak, the best chicken, and the best salmon you will ever try won't come from the grocery store? Now, you can only find this kind of stuff from the family farms or independent Alaskan fishermen. But now, you can find all of this wrapped into one beautiful-looking box called the Moink Box. Moink is on a mission to fight for the family farms once again. It's run by an 8th-generation female farmer. They deliver top-quality, humanely raised meats straight to your door. And let me tell you, Moink's meat tastes just like it should, because they farm like our grandparents did. The difference is one you can actually taste. With Moink, you're in control. Choose exactly what goes in your box, from ribeyes to chicken breasts to pork chops and so much more. Plus, you can cancel anytime you want. I'm telling you, Moink is here to save rural America. I love it so much, and I know you will too. So join the Moink movement today. Even Shark Tank's Kevin O'Leary has even called Moink's bacon the best he has ever tasted. Keep American farming going strong by signing up at moinkbox.com/TNQ right now. And listeners of this show will even get free bacon for a year. That is 1 year of the best bacon you will ever taste, but only for a limited time. It's spelled moinkbox.com/TNQ. That's moinkbox.com/TNQ. Go join the Moink movement today, just like I am.
I, you know, I'm like, I think it's fine. They're probably just running late, maybe traffic. I'll call them. So I hang up with Keisha and I call Courtney and go straight to her voicemail. I call my brother Race and go straight to his voicemail.
Phones weren't even ringing.
Not even ringing, yeah. Which was weird. Like, okay, like, that's weird. And then I'm just kind of sitting on my bed, just kind of like, And then my phone rings and unknown number. I answer it. And he says it's Dr. So-and-so from Fillmore Hospital. And so immediately, and he said, there's been a car accident. He said, there's been a car accident. And so before he's even done telling me what's going on, I put him on speaker and I text Keisha. And I say, Keisha, there's been a car accident. Come get me. We need to go to Fillmore, which is about a 2-hour drive. And in my mind, Marcus, I was thinking, okay, car accident. Courtney and Race are hurt. That's why they're not answering the phones. The kids are probably at the hospital in the hallway freaking out. So we need to get there. That's kind of what I, that's kind of where my mind went. So I tell Keisha, come pick me up because my family took the car and I only have my Harley motorcycle. So I can't take Keisha. So I'm telling Keisha, come get me. I don't even know all the details yet. So he's asking me a bunch of questions and I think he was just trying to make sure he had the right guy because he's about to tell me the worst news. But
yeah.
And I finally get to the point, and I'm sorry, like some moments I remember vividly and then it's, I just don't even remember parts of it.
Fine.
But I finally say to him, like, dude, what's going on? And he said, I'm sorry to tell you, there's been a terrible car accident. Everyone's dead except one person. And so I remember I fell to the ground and I dropped my phone and I'm crying and I'm slapping the floor. But I'm also in shock and denial. And I remember I'm kind of out of body, but also very in my body. Just kind of, I don't even know, like a dream.
Definitely a stasis that happens when you get something like that.
Yeah, like, yeah. Like
I don't know what the name of it is. I don't know what they, I don't think we have a name for what we call that. Everyone describes it kind of the same, but a little bit different. There's this...
The best way I describe it is the stages of grief. I was immediately going through all of them. Like,
yeah, they're getting loaded.
I was just going through all, like, maybe all at the same time even. I don't know, but.
Yeah, that's a good way of saying it.
Once in a while, and there'd be, like, this survivor guy that would kind of step in. He's like, okay, Mace, like, you need to pick up the phone. You need to figure out who it is. You got to tell your parents what, like, we need to, there's more to do here. And so I remember, and dude, like, if you understood my brother Race, you'd appreciate it better. But this guy was a state championship wrestler. He was an MMA fighter, boxer. He's just tough guy. And so I remember picking up the phone and my thought was, it's going to be Race. And that meant my whole family would be dead. And so I remember praying to God, like, please, like, don't let it be Race. I have a lot of guilt over that, but then I also
don't do that. Don't put that guilt on you. I know exactly where you're going with that and what that
I try not to, but
yeah, don't do that to yourself. I mean, that's a hard thing, especially when there's that many people who have died. Because I talked to the families on that too. And I've had family members come up to me and they said, I wish you were the one that died. And I feel guilty about that. And I was like, hey man, don't ever feel guilty about that. There's nothing you can control about it, so don't. That wasn't on you.
Damn, dude. You've dealt with some heavy shit, dude. But I... Yeah, I just... Shame, dude. It doesn't have to make sense. Like, I just feel bad. And there's a part of me that knows, like, you don't... Race, like, we all get it. But there's another part of me, like, that's fucking messed up, man.
Yeah. Bro... I get that. That's what I don't know if we have a word for whatever that is, but
I think shame's the closest thing, or guilt.
Yeah.
And those are like two things we never talk about, really. we just like self-implode with alcohol or drug, like whatever we do. But like, I really like, that's one thing I'm learning, like shame and guilt. We all have it. We never talk about it. And we're all just trying to figure out how, what do we do with it?
Yeah. You'll know if you got some shame and guilt on board, cause you'll like to drink.
Yeah. That's a
good, whatever shame and guilt is, they love alcohol. All right. Whatever that, when that gets in you, I had to go through that too. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm still
through that round.
So let's get back to the moment of getting the call from the doctor. You still don't know who he's saying everyone's dead, but one, but you don't know who that is.
And he said it was a multiple car pileup. So I wasn't even like, is the one survive? Is it in another car? Like and also like, there's a very good chance this doctor is explaining everything to me very well. And I'm just like, not hearing it good, because like I'm really struggling hearing this. And so I remember picking up my phone, like, don't be race. And he says the survivor, is a 3-year-old. So I fall back to the ground, and my wife Courtney's gone, and we're high school sweethearts. I never dated another girl. Like, that was, she was it. And the car accident was so bad, they said, you can't see her, but you can see her hand if you want to see her hand. I'm like, I can't do that. And I feel shame and guilt about that now, too. Courtney's gone. My oldest son, Riggins, who's about a week away from turning 6, is gone. My brother Race is gone, and my nephew Ryder's gone. And then 3-year-old, I don't know what that meant. That could be my son Blue, who's 4, but like he could be mistaken for 3, or it could be my daughter Frankie, who's 2, but maybe they think she's 3. And I remember telling I don't know why I said it, but I remember telling the doctor, I'm like, I think you have my daughter Frankie. And in my brain, Frankie had the backwards car seat because she was so little. So I'm like, maybe it was the backwards car seat that saved. So I threw out Frankie. Like, is it a girl? And they're like, no, this is a boy. He has blonde hair, blue eyes. And he's conscious and he's okay. He's got a broken hand and some cuts, but he's okay.
That's all he has.
He won't say his name. He won't say anything, but we're going to life flight him to the hospital in Salt Lake, which is a 4-hour drive for me. So I'm like, okay. So I was probably like 80% sure it was Blue. I was hoping it was Blue. And then the doctor says, I need to get a hold of Keisha and tell Keisha. And I said, Keisha's actually coming to my house right now to pick me up. I can tell her. But there was a lot of confusion, at least for me, in the phone call. And so I remember telling the doctor, I'm like, I'm not telling her unless 100% sure everyone else is dead. And he's like, yeah, everyone else is dead. And then I said, okay, I'll tell her. And I was living in an apartment at the time because we couldn't move into our house for a couple months. So we're living in this little apartment, which I actually loved looking back on it because it was so small and we were just kind of on top of each other for a couple months. Like, just, it was great looking back on it. But anyway, we're in this apartment and Keisha knows where the apartment complex is, but she doesn't know the specific one. And I can't really, I mean, I'm crying. Like, I'm a complete mess. So I can't really make a phone call. So my plan is I just got to get to the main road. And then when I see her car, I can flag her down. And I remember, like, I'd go 20 or 30 feet, and then I'd just collapse and cry and smack the pavement and just lose it, and then I'd stand back up. And I did that a couple times, and then I finally made it to the main road and fell to the ground. And at this point, strangers were coming out. I'm screaming in this apartment complex. I am screaming. So at this point, people are coming out, like, what is going on? I don't know if I said, maybe I said something to him. I don't remember. But then I see Keisha's car. And so I stand up and I flag Keisha down. And she just kind of pulls into the middle turn lane, and I just hop in the back seat, and she's with her daughter Faith, and they see me and they're like, what is going on? And so then I said, there's been a car accident. Everyone's dead except maybe Blue. And my niece, Faith, lets out this scream and takes off running. Like, she opens the door and just takes off running. And so then I turn and I look at Keisha, who's right in front of me driving. And I see her head drop and she says, oh, my precious rider. And then I had to call my parents to tell them to go to the hospital because they're life-flighting Blue, and it's going to take me 4 hours to get there. So I want someone there for Blue if it's him, if he's alive, like, want someone there. And so I had to tell them. And then I called my buddy Jake and, like, can you give me a ride? So he picks me up, and I had to leave Faith and Keisha in the parking lot. So I had to leave them. And so my buddy Jake takes me. He drives me 4 hours, and we have to drive through the car accident to get there. And then I get to the hospital, and I get to Blue's room, and he's alive, and it's him, and he has a neck brace on, but it was just, you know, like precautionary things. He was one night in the hospital, and we left the next day.
What?
So did you see the car wreck when you were driving through?
It was dark by the time we got to it, and my buddy Jake said, we're getting close to the car accident. I'd keep your head down. And then I did peek up to look. I didn't see much, though. It was pretty. I just saw yellow lights, some trucks. I didn't really see much, though. But it was, I think.
They say what had happened?
No, I don't know the exact time. I just barely saw pictures of it maybe like a month ago. I was finally able to do that. So it's still been a kind of a process for me. So. Sure. Yeah.
Oh, that is rough. So what happened to when you went to the
first of all, brother, I'm sorry you're having to go do
this. Yeah, that's crazy.
You understand?
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that.
I mean, from the bottom of my heart.
Yeah.
I mean, you gotta whenever you signed up to come down in here, brother, you tacked on a good one.
Yeah. So am I
I don't know any there's only one other guy that I know of that's got is walking around with you, what you got.
Yeah.
And he's like you. He changed it into a positive.
Well, I got to meet this guy.
I'll introduce you. Don't worry.
Is it you? Are you talking about yourself?
I'm not sure. No. Hey, man, I need guys. There's men down here I have to look to.
I mean, well, I
speak worse than me because when I get my butt whipped every day, so I have to have people that I have to look to. You're one of them.
Dude, I love that you just said you get – dude, that's grief. Like, you wake up and you just get your ass kicked today and you're going to lose. Like, you're not going to get any of them back. Like, you're going to lose. But you still just fight on and do what you – like, that. Like, that's kind of – that's the best you can do. And
that's the one God's love. He loves the fighters.
Like, yeah.
Just get in there and no matter what you do to them, they'll always step into it.
Yeah.
Bravery. Some people, man, is like, hey, no, he knows he's going to get his ass kicked and he'll still go in there. You know what that does for people?
Well, that's why I love the whole buffalo metaphor, the whole buffalo and cow metaphor is like, dude, the buffaloes know they're going to get their ass kicked. Like, the buffaloes get their ass kicked when they head into the storm, but they get the good shit with the storm. The cows that run away from it, all the cows are going to experience is the snow or the rain or the shit part of the storm. But like, if you embrace it and go into it, yeah, you're going to get fucked up. I'm not saying you're not going to get hurt, but you're also going to get the benefits of it.
Yeah, that's right.
That's one thing I learned with my grief. And dude, like Marcus, I just ran from it the first year. Drugs, alcohol, I couldn't talk about them, couldn't look at pictures of them. And then like, just no way to handle the grief. Like, you have to embrace it. You have to feel it. It's going to hurt like hell. You have to feel it. And if you can feel the terrible hell part of it, then you're going to get to this point of grief where you can also feel the love and the joy and the good times and the gratitude that's still there. But you're never going to get to those good parts if you run away from the bad parts, because the bad and the good, they're located in the same spot. They're located in the same spot, Marcus. So, like, if you run from the pain, you're running from the growth. And, like, I think I already knew all of that before the accident with my family, but the new understanding and perspective of it has totally changed my life.
That's how you know the difference. That's how you can see it in somebody's eyes. There's a difference between talking about it and then when they've been road tested.
Right, yeah.
I mean, when you can tell when somebody's had it. It's just the way they talk. They don't have to force it on you. They don't have to yell at you. They don't have to demean you, boiling, nothing.
Yeah.
As soon as you open your mouth, people, it's a vibrational. Something happens to your vibrational tone, just the way you speak.
Yeah, Marcus, I got some questions for you.
All right, send them.
I want to talk about this. Like, help me with survivor's guilt. What are you doing?
Okay, so first of all, you're thinking about that you're the survivor and they're not. There's something after this. It's a lot better than down in here. Imagine this place is the prison. So you and I are in prison. So you're going to be upset because your wife and kids got out of prison? No. You're going to be happy that they got out of here and went to heaven. You and I are still in here doing time. We got life. You ever hear those words? Life, time. Oh, by the way, you and I also got the death penalty. That's the only way we check out of here.
Thank God for the death penalty, right?
You know what I mean? So don't feel bad about anybody who's been put out on parole or done their time and then got to go on, especially the good ones. That ought to be an elation in your body and in your mind knowing that. You and I are still down in here having to go through the roll. The fact that you became a teacher at a young age changes you dramatically. And sometimes, look, the good ones, you don't want them in here. This place can be brutal. It's designed to kill us. You understand? That's how I had to look at it. Because everything around me dies. And all I had to look at it was because I'm as mean as I am, and I'm as tough as I am, and the way this place is designed, and for whatever reason, everyone surrounds me, that God puts around me, is wonderful. So I don't have a problem when they get taken away from me because they weren't mine to begin with. My job is just to watch out for them. And if I had no control about how they got pulled away from me, then it wasn't my fault. Now, if I'd have been negligent in my duties and all that, yeah. But I'm a watcher, man, a protector. You kind of, whatever God puts in front of you for a little time or for a long time, that's how I had to do it. Man, we are survivors. There shouldn't be any guilt with being a survivor because every time that happens to you, you get stronger and stronger and stronger. People will always be looking to you. That's why you get moved into certain positions, and everybody from this point on that comes into your life needs you.
Well, and the fact that your son survived. So there's obviously some purpose that he has, and only you can teach
him
that.
You're the only one that can give him that.
Yeah. I do think... I think Blue's teaching me more than I could ever teach him, or what he saved my life. Like if Blue, I mean, Blue's like I said earlier, like being a father to Blue is more than enough for me to stay here and stick this thing out. But like Marcus, okay. So okay. I have a good day. I'm dating again. I have this girlfriend. She's awesome. So I have a good day and I'm happy. But then like, later, or even sometimes during the happiness, like this weird mix, I have guilt. Like, why do I get to have a good day and my daughter doesn't, and my wife? Like, so because like I think the best thing you can do for your loved ones is live a good life for them. Like, that's how you honor them. Keep talking about them. But then like, there's a part of me that doesn't want to live a good life. Like, I want to be miserable. I don't feel like I deserve or should be happy. So that's kind of, I don't know how I struggle with that one, Marcus.
Those two feelings usually they correspond with each other, right?
Which two feelings?
When you're having a great time, everything's good. And then the next minute there's something that pisses you off and you feel like those go together, right?
Yes.
Okay. So there's a separation between the lives. There's an interim that you have to go through, just like all of this. So when you're in the hard part and then you're working your way back into the good one, it's like a rubber band. Eventually you're going to work your way back out of it, and it's not going to be there anymore. Those are those thoughts. They come in real hardcore in the beginning, and then if you've noticed, after a while, it's allowing you to ease into the good times. Because if you just went from everybody dying to being a party guy and having a great time, then we'd have a problem. But we're not wired that way. The human body is not designed that way. It's got systems and everything that runs on bells and whistles. It's how you know that you're actually healthy. It's okay to move on. Moreover, it's your family telling you it's okay.
Yeah.
The one thing those women would want and your boy would want was for this. Because let me tell you something. You can't raise Blue being mean and upset in a bad mood all the time. And don't worry about that kid. He's been tested. I would imagine watching him grow up from this point on, man, if you've noticed, he needs his daddy. He needs you to be stronger than ever. But for whatever reason, that kid's going to have something in it. All right? It got put in there. You don't get broke around here. You get broke open. So let's see what's inside that sucker.
Marcus, how do you deal with your PTSD?
That's a progression. There's levels of that. It's pissed off, tired, stoned, and drunk.
How bad do you struggle with it, like today, like daily?
I don't have it.
Are you ready to level up your savings and handle finances like a boss? Go check out Navy Federal Credit Union and boost your savings game with Navy Federal's top-notch certificate options. Unlike other banks, Navy Federal offers a wide variety of saving choices tailored just to you. All you need to do to start off is with a small deposit and sit back and watch your savings grow effortlessly. With flexible terms, Navy Federal's options fit any timeline. And if you're thinking about home upgrades or you're consolidating debt, you can borrow up to 100% of your home's equity with no closing costs. Navy Federal makes handling big expenses so easy. You can learn all about this and more at NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Go visit NavyFederal.org for more details. Navy Federal is insured by the NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Membership is required, terms and conditions apply, and loans are subject to approval.
Can you explain to me that process?
There's a lot of work that went into that.
Yeah, it's a process. The alcohol, it's like once you go in, I had to get off all that because that just holds it. What alcohol, like, you, and you said this, it's like all this stuff got on me, but the Buffalo, man, you got to run through the storm. So no matter however long you're on the pills or on the alcohol, it's just sitting in there. All that does is hold, it doesn't mask it, it holds it.
Yeah, what do you mean, what's sitting in there? What do you mean?
Like anger. The anger, the rage,
yeah. And all that stuff. Yeah.
As soon as that gets in there, if any human being, when you get upset and you walk outside and you start doing it, eventually it goes away. You work it out. Like you talk it out, you hit the bag, do whatever it is to get that. It's because it's an energy. It forms into an energy. And when you drink or you take drugs, man, it bottles it. That's why they say that. It holds it in there.
It's like it feeds the worst part of you.
It's a fuel for that. Mm-hmm. It is an absolute fuel for that. Moreover, it makes you stay in certain spots and you don't get out and you need to be around other people.
The way I got rid
of all that was I got sent out to the people. I didn't have a chance to sit in my room. Even when I was hurt, my doctors would come and get me. Everyone was talking to me and then I would talk back. I never had time to focus on anything that happened to me in the past. Cause I only got one day in here. Just one day. Tomorrow's not promised to you and yesterday is gone. So we live what we have in the one day. If you wake up and you have a bad day or a hard day, that's going to remind you of how good your good ones are. And it's a progression.
How long did it take you to have, you could string together a good month? Like you had a good month.
Yeah, man, I don't have that.
He always gets his butt kicked.
Yeah, I get my ass kicked every day, bro.
That's what I'm getting at. Like,
you'll never forget your family. Matter of fact, what happens is they become more powerful in you. Mm-hmm. So every time you go out to get into a fight, fight the day, attack the day. Like when you get up in the morning, the first thing I say is, I will serve. I say, good morning, Mary. Good morning, Joseph. Good morning, Jesus. I was like, what do you got for me? I was like, because I'm going out to fight. I came in here to whip your ass, dude. And at the very least, if it's a draw or if it's neutral, or even if you take me in a rush, it doesn't matter because I came in there to fight. And then when I lay down, I sleep and I get back up every day. The minute you go out there without your freaking armor on, you'll get your ass kicked.
Faith?
Can I ask you another question? The stages of grief. You have anger, denial, bargaining, acceptance, depression. Did we get them all?
Yeah.
What one throughout going, and I know like you're still currently going through it, but which one of those five did you spend the most time in, or did you think anger. You were anger?
Anger, man. Anger is my thing. Okay.
How do you
harness it? Look, what I was taught was to harness that. So in my community, not only did I learn how to control it, I learned how to harness it and use it for my advantage.
What do you do with it? What helps your anger, or what do you do?
I drive my tractor. I cut the yard. I work the cows. I talk to people motivationally. Like I use my rage and I turn it around. I'm like, dude, this is the funniest thing. You want to hear this? Like sometimes my kid does something and Blue will probably do this. I don't know if this happens to you. And I say this, I'm probably a horrible parent, but it's the truth. I was like, my son does some things some days that are so exceptional. I love him so much. I want to hit him. I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll just be like, you are wonderful. I want to hit you right in the head. I can't help it. But what I had to do is, and I use this line. Hey, look, I'm not yelling at you. I'm motivating you. So if something gets into me and my anger spikes up, then I'll turn it into something and go take it out on the yard. Or I'll go take it out on I have a log and an axe, and I'll just go out there and beat that freaking thing to death. Or I'll go lift weights, whatever. Because I have to contain that. And I use that instead of taking an energy drink or taking any kind of drug. I use that. I was taught to do that.
What about talking about your pain? That helped you? Because I think you taught you're very open, very like casual about it even. And I think it's a certain kind of strength. And I kind of have a weird question. I think I'm just weird, but I just want to ask you another question. Is that all right? So like, okay, lone survivor guy, like, okay, doesn't get any hardcore than that. But like, I'm trying to think how I phrase this question. For like, if you take an average guy, what do you think they'd be more willing to do? Open up and be vulnerable and honest and talk about their shame and guilt, or pick up a gun and go into battle?
Every man is more intimidated by talking about themselves, the inner shames and guilts.
Probably the hardest thing.
That's the hardest thing for any guy to do. It's actually harder for the tougher guys. The tougher they are, the worse it is.
I just like, what have we done in society? Like, what have we
done? Here's the problem. I was talking about this earlier. Y'all haven't been taught the right way. And if you understood that your life that you were born into is actually an SF program for something else, like something entirely other than earthly, right? Down here, you are in an SF pipeline, special forces. You have been through the worst thing I've ever heard of. You understand me? The only difference between me and you is someone taught me how to deal with it mentally and what that means. And the men that I'm around, we take the stuff that happens to us and open up and talk about it. Because a lot of times we're watching each other go through it and we'll laugh about it because you realize, I mean, you can't do it. This is it. This is what we're in. This is how this works.
You got to laugh or cry sometimes.
That's right. Or both. I've laughed so hard, I've cried.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I've laughed so hard, I've cried.
And I mean, how many times have I laughed and cried on this podcast? Yeah. I've been laughing and crying this whole episode.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that comes out of our guys. And it's as you get older, your emotional state changes. And if you, man, look, you went through a lifetime of stuff in the early part of it. I try to explain this to people. Like, the reason I am the way I am is because the amount of death I've seen. Most time you have to be 80 years old, 70, 80 years old before you've seen the amount of death that I've seen. And think that just changes you.
Yeah,
you cut all the bullshit out. You get straight to the good stuff. Like, hey, man, I freaking love you. Let's go eat some dinner. Let's hang out and watch a great movie. Let's go watch a ball game or something. I don't want to argue. I don't want to fight. I don't want to. I definitely don't want to kill you. Okay. I don't want to do that. And man, when you realize how significant a life form is, like each individual person is a tool set down here for a reason. Some of us have to go through these crazy gauntlets, and they are gauntlets, and they're there to challenge you to see if you will stand up afterwards or if you'll just sit back down. Because if you stand up and help people and do what you said is on the back of that sign on that wall right there, then you change everyone's life. They can't possibly fathom what you've gone. I can't. You keep reverting back to me, bro. Let me tell you something. If they take my wife and kids away from me, man, that'd be the end of me. Because they're the one things that saved my life.
Yeah. Well, that's why I have blue. That's why blue survived.
Oh, dude, you're
kind of. I mean, I don't know where I'd be. I don't know if I would have made it without him.
And there's definitely some huge higher purpose. And maybe it is him teaching you right now, but in the end, he's going to be something incredible. And there's no rhyme or reason that we can understand why this happened to you, but there is a reason. There is some sort of greater purpose, and you have to believe that. And you have to, your family is still with you in spirit. You'll see signs. You've got to see signs every once in a while.
I've had very many cool experiences with them.
That, I mean, you have
that's real. That so don't ignore all that.
I think
that's there to help you.
I think what you guys said, I love your perspective. I think, and I see it very much the same way. Maybe I think the way I see it, and this is just the way I see life, is the car accident with my family meant absolutely nothing. It doesn't mean absolutely anything. And it's the same thing with your life. It doesn't mean anything. It's up to you to make it something. And I think that's the point of life. And I think that's the car accident. It's up to me. Like, what's my 90% going to look like? How am I going to handle this thing? I can make this car accident a good thing, or I can die trying. Like, I can help people. I can save other people's lives because of this car accident. And so I can make something special out of it. My brother, my cousin, my mom, my dad, my in-laws, I don't know how they're handling it. I don't know what they're going to do with it. Maybe it's
watching
totally
you.
Mm-hmm. But that's
how it works.
As a motivational speaker, that's what I tell sports teams. That's what I tell individuals. Like, listen, it's up to you how the season's going to go. It's up to you. Like, you're the master of your fate here. And that's how I see it is this thing, right? I mean, the year after the car accident, it really, like, I couldn't get out of bed. It destroyed me. And I'm like, no, screw this. My family want me to fight back. I'm going to try to make something good happen out of this. And I think that's the point of life, is handling shitty moments the best you can.
When did you have that realization, like, just laying in bed? Did you watch a movie or hear a song, or did someone talk to you?
So I started going to therapy. My dad's a therapist.
Dad's a therapist?
Yeah.
And so we should try therapy. And so I go to this therapy. I saw probably 5 or 6 therapists, and they were like, whatever. And then I finally found one that got to me. And we're good buddies now. His name is Matt. Anyway, Matt Quackenbush. So I go see Matt.
That's his name?
Yeah, Matt Quackenbush, right? You won't forget that name.
No.
Yeah.
But this is my usual routine when I'd see a therapist. I tell him the night of the story, and then I tell him, I don't want to live anymore. I want to die so I can be with my family, but I can't kill myself because I love Blue, and I can't leave Blue here, and I got to be a father to Blue. So I'm kind of, I don't want to live. I don't want to die. And I just stare at him, and it never really went good. And then I saw Matt, and I did the same thing to Matt. And Matt looked at me, and he said, Mason, this car accident's not about you. And this car accident's not about your son, Blue. And I was, like, pissed. Like, what are you even talking about? And he said, Mason, if you want to lay in bed the rest of your life and drink yourself to death or kill yourself, I don't think anyone would blame you. And in my mind, I'm, like, laughing. Like, dude, can you even say that? Like, I'm not doing good, dude. Like, I'm actually thinking about suicide. And
you knew with this?
Yeah, like we were like, I don't think this is going very well. And but then he immediately followed it up and he said, Mason, he said, tomorrow someone's gonna lose a spouse, someone's gonna lose a son or a daughter, or a brother, or a sister, or a niece, or a nephew. And you can help all of them. You can help all of them, Mason. You have the he said opportunity. And I hated that word. Like, because I grew up college, like at like I grew like opportunity in my mind was you work hard, you put in time, you sacrifice, you show up, consistency, you get an opportunity, you get a chance, and you're ready, you take advantage of it. Yeah. And that's still true, but I also learned that opportunity could come from the absolute worst thing. Yeah. But it's still an opportunity. Like, what are you going to do? And so I just remember leaving. It wasn't like a 180, like I skipped out of there, like, oh, like I'm just going to help people now. But like, I remember like that had an impact on me. Like this, the idea of we is greater than me really helped change my life. The perspective, like if I wake up and I think about me and my dead wife and my dead son and my dead daughter, I'm not going to do well. But if I can wake up and think about, wow, I get to go on a podcast today, or I get to go to a high school and talk about mental illness, or like whatever it is that I can do in a positive way, I can think about the we, then I like my life and I feel like I'm keeping them alive and what I'm doing. And I love that. But it, I don't think it means anything. I could be handling this very terribly and that story could very much be happening right now. And some days it is.
So Howard,
well, it's brand new. This is fresh.
Yeah, dude, we're talking like, and I don't know how people's timeline work, but it's just 2.5 years. Like that's pretty, in my perspective, that's it's pretty
very fresh.
That's yeah, three and a half years. I mean, what's your family? So what do you? Yes. How do you quantify into a number?
I tell people like grief, it's a life sentence, man. Like
that's
not
you strap that on for a while. Yeah. Absolutely, you just learn how to deal with it. It's you can go in the gym and lift some weights, or man, life can throw some weight on you.
Yes, sir.
You see those guys who walk around with them, man, because their spirits are bigger than you can even imagine. They've been worked out like you can't believe, brother. And that's when he said that, that's funny the way he said it. I would have probably smirked at him too and been like, man, what the hell are you talking about? But he's right. He's like, an opportunity was given to you. You didn't have to earn it. You didn't have to earn it. It was just given to you. And this is what you're doing with it.
How's Keisha doing?
She's doing good. She's a yoga. I think her outlet is she does yoga and teaches these really powerful classes. And I think all things considered, she's doing as good as she can. And we both live in St. George, so we're still pretty close. And it's nice to have her. I'll say that, like, just because we're both very much feeling the same thing. So
how's Blue?
Dude, Blue is... he's doing so good. He's kindergarten. He's in basketball. He has a little dirt bike that he loves. We one wheel all the time. He's nice. An active kid, man. I love that kid.
Does he get to see Faith and his other cousins from up the other area?
Yeah. So I actually had a sister move down here about 6 months ago with her four kids. So he's got those cousins and he's meeting some friends off his basketball team. But we go up north a couple times a month and see everyone. Yeah,
do y'all spend reunions once a year?
Yeah, we usually do some in the summer still, and then I'm still
squared away. I love the families that do that. We ours is
Thanksgiving.
Everyone shows up for that. Like a mandatory. We used to have that when my grandparents were alive, and I think it's the best. Even if you hate your family, show up and hang out, because I mean they're there for a reason. I love the whole big family concept. I married into a Cajun family, bro, and there's a mess of them.
That's so good, man.
We're fiery too.
Yeah fiery.
Well, thank
you. So are you seeing in the future, man? Where's this? What are we gonna do? I mean, I you know what your purpose is.
I left that therapy session like, okay, so how do I help people? And I'm like, well, I want to be a grief. I got my bachelor's degree in psychology. So I'm like, I want to be a grief therapist, like a grief counselor, and just help people who have lost loved ones. Like, I think I'd be good at that with my experience. But then, like, I'm still not ready to take on a master's program yet. But so, like, my long-term plan is to be a grief therapist. But for now, I've just done podcasting and public speaking and that's what I'm doing right now, as well as being a father to Blue, obviously.
You just said something made me think of something that I was told. That pain that you felt right after that phone call and everything that you're going through in right after that,
yeah, was
all of the experience that you're going to be talking about loaded in 1 second. And the pain you're feeling after that is like you had just went into the gym for 4 months and you came out of there and your body's kind of weak and your mind's weak. That's what happened.
Yeah, that's what it felt like.
It could be like that because in the athletics and everything, I was like, okay, yeah. So sometimes the boss has a funny way of loading all your material into you. And then what you're, all those emotions and all that stuff, you're trying to figure out what the hell that is. It's getting in order. It's kind of working itself out. Then life has to present situations that bring it out. And when we don't know what that is, we drink. I think it's like a pain. And do all that. So that's kind of what happened to me as well. That was part of my culture. I was already drinking before I got jacked up. So
give me like how much you drinking? How much were you drinking in your heyday? Like in your dark moments?
I walk around with a pint of Jack Daniels in my back pocket.
Yeah.
Like a little shooter.
Yeah. It gets bad.
Well, I had a great time. I had a great time. Everyone else didn't, but
I did not.
I was freaking. I finally, after I cleared up a little bit to see her, she told me, I was like, okay.
And I have to say, as someone, as the spouse, and we can even put Blue in this position, the person getting the brunt of the alcohol and the pills or whatever it is that you're doing to mask or numb the pain, it's not fun for us. And I cannot express how thankful and grateful I am for the day that Marcus stopped all of that. And I know that that took an extreme amount of discipline and strength, and it still does every single day. That, I mean, it's been 3 years now that he hasn't had any alcohol or any.
I'm the most boring son bitch you ever met, bro. I'm in bed by dark.
I love it.
She freaking loves it
so much. Neither of us drink. We don't do any. There's no kind of masking any of his pain. He has to just face it and deal with it. And he does. And he does that through discipline and faith. And I could not be more grateful for that. And at some point when you are ready to jump back into faith, Blue will appreciate that more than anything else, because y'all are a team. We're a team, and our kids. I mean, we're all this team together. And yes, grief fucking sucks. It does. But there's better things down here. Your family is better than that.
And I think there's, as shitty as the grief is, I think there's good parts about the grief that it will teach you and give you. But
that's what it is. Yeah.
No one got to embrace it. Got to embrace the bad to get the good. It's the oldest line in the book, right? The good and the bad, the yin and the yang.
Yeah.
So.
There's a reason some of those terms have been around for existence.
I think you're right, dude.
You know what I'm talking about? I put some thought into that a couple of years ago. I was like, hey, some of these sayings that stuck around, you learn what they
act. Like this saying, it's been around forever.
That's one of them, too.
Yeah, it's a good one.
So how can our listeners find your podcast and follow you? And
So my podcast, the 1090 podcast, it's on all the, like, it's on Spotify, iTunes, it's on all the big ones. And then we've mostly been on Instagram, but we just started, I have like an audio guy that does all the videos because I hate how my voice sounds. So I never listen to anything again once it's posted. Anyway. He just started a Twitter or a TikTok.
Don't be, man. It's fine. You're fine.
We have Instagram and TikTok and that type of stuff. So that's basically where you can find us.
At 1090.
Yeah, you have to type in the before the number 10. So the number 10 and then spell out 90.
Okay.
I think a math teacher took 1090, so I had to use the 1090.
Man, God.
Yeah. So
awesome. Well, thank you for being vulnerable and sharing your story. I know
that's like my favorite thing these days. I can't believe I'm on this podcast right now. It's pretty cool.
I'll, I'll get Hunter to, I'll get your number. All right, we'll swap phone numbers. You ever got a question about anything? You need to, you got about death, especially about death. She's always with me. Right. I mean, I kind of,
I know that has more friends that die than I've ever.
Like, no, I, well, I maybe I don't want to be your friend then.
Be careful.
I know. I mean, I, since being married to him, I'm not exaggerating by any means at all. There have been well over 80 funerals that we have attended.
I'm talking about my roommates.
Yeah.
Dead. All my roommates are dead.
Swim buddies.
My swim buddy, my.
Not, this is not good.
If you are near me, you will get my twin brother, helicopter crash. Freaking, yeah. I mean,
he's just, still alive.
Still alive. Yes. Can't kill him. But I mean, so I know that world.
Yeah.
The one you, that you just came into. So anytime you need anything, just send me a text, man. You want to call, bump something off your chest. I got you.
All right. I'm going to take a picture of you guys. That, all right?
Okay.
I usually don't really care. Like what, like, I don't get starstruck very often. Like I grew up worshiping basketball players for some reason. And then I learned, like, why do I care about so much? Like, you're a true hero, dude. So I'm just blown away. And thanks again, man. I appreciate this.
Yeah, man. God bless you, brother. You're going to do great things for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Take care of Blue and your family of yours, man. And we'll be in touch. All right.
Send us a picture of him.
Yeah. Yeah. We need some updates. We'll send you both our numbers so we keep in touch.
Sounds good.
We definitely have people. I mean, just through all of our experience with death, we have a lot of people that help others in those situations. So if you want to get connected just with any of our contacts, we can just.
Yeah. I'm actually, I travel and do podcasts. I'm actually coming to Texas in May. So maybe I'll hit you up and I can try to get you on. Depending,
yeah, go text over, man. We'll do the swap. Like I'll come on your podcast. Yeah. Here's another thing, man, is your age. Mm-hmm. Like you're very young to have this.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? So
yeah.
You're going to grow with it. It's going to grow with you and it'll cultivate itself, man. But just, you know, take it one day at a time. There is no tomorrow. It's when you get, I ask in the morning, I'm like, hey man, what are we doing today? Mm-hmm. Don't tell me today what we're doing tomorrow. I don't even want to know.
Well, I do think that's one of the blessings of grief is that, or at least for me anyways, it's really helped me like, hey, like be in the moment.
Yeah, yeah. It does that. Hell yeah. Yeah, it does that for sure. All right, brother, man. Bless you. Have a great day.
Yeah, appreciate you guys.
Thank you.